Hey everyone, I'm Yasmin Nouri and you're listening to the Behind Her Empire podcast. I'm on a mission to showcase successful self-made women who share honest stories and lessons of what it really takes to create the life you want and build your own empire. If you've been listening to the show, you know, just like you, I've been on my own personal journey to build my empire. I started my business Bia to help women tackle their period problems and hormonal imbalances using a natural whole foods approach. If you're suffering from bad cramps, irregular periods, fatigue, bloating, stay tuned because a little bit later in the podcast, I'll share a bit more about my company, Bia. But for now, let's jump into today's episode. I want to welcome this week's guest, Courtney Claghorn, to our show today. Courtney is the founder of Sugared and Bronze, the nation's largest all-natural sugaring and airbrush tanning destination. Shortly after graduating college, Courtney moved back home without a job and completely confused about her next steps. She eventually got a job in fintech and moved to Santa Monica. Even though she was living and working near a beach, she rarely spent time in the sun since she worked indoors, which meant she frequented tanning salons, especially when they were special occasions. Courtney was done overpaying for spray tans at underwhelming locations and decided to create a more natural solution that not only was affordable, but kept people coming back for more. And that's when Sugared and Bronze was born. In this week's episode, Courtney talks to us about how she successfully started the business as a side hustle with only $500 out of her apartment to now running 23 locations all over the country. She opens up about how miserable she was in her fintech job, when she decided to finally take the leap, and how she discovered herself when she was the most confused and unhappy. Courtney dives into how she bootstrapped the business for the first 9 years, the overwhelming stress COVID placed on the company, and how they were able to overcome it. We also end on how not having a detailed business plan was key to her success and so much more. Welcome to the show, Courtney.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so excited.
When we were chatting, you know, before going to the podcast, I guess I was one of the OG customers years ago going to your retail location. So it's so cool to see how much you guys have grown over the years, because I had no clue. I was like, wow, they're expanding to different states. They have more locations. So big fan of everything you're doing, the all natural component, and excited to dig into all your fun stories today. So thank you again.
Yeah, you saw our very humble beginnings, I think, in Santa Monica and Beverly Hills, you said, which is so funny. I mean, those are some of the oldest stores, I mean, which have now been relocated. But I love that you've really seen it from its roots.
Yeah. And it was great. I would not even realize it was like two people bootstrapping it, you leading it all. I mean, it was very good. And customer experience was always top notch. So it's cool to see how those fundamentals were there so early, you know, when you were figuring things out. So it's really fun to see your growth there. But before we go into your story with that, I actually was curious to learn more about your upbringing. You know, if you were to kind of reflect back on that time, what would you say would maybe be one of your earliest childhood memories that you think maybe influenced the woman you are today, or might be the most impactful from that time?
Oh my gosh. Well, I mean, it's hard to pick just one, but I would say, you know, honestly, I think having divorced parents, like there are so many memories that come with that, good and bad, but I always say I would never change that. Like, I really think that I always had to see things from two sides, because two people I really loved really didn't ever agree on anything. You know, they were both great parents. They maintained somewhat of a relationship for me at the bare minimum that they had to. I lived with my mom and my stepdad full time, but I always would go to see my dad wherever, whatever state he was living in at the time. And or whoever he was married to. So I really saw different parts of the country. Like, I'd go spend a month in Telluride or Hilton Head Island or whatever my dad was up to, and then always come home to a very, you know, consistent, normal household and base. But I also was exposed to so much more. And I think it just really made me the person that I am today.
Yeah, I love that. It's interesting. You know, when you were talking about your experience, I'm like, wow, that I also kind of had a similar upbringing. My parents were divorced. They did a good job co-parenting. Majority of my time I was with my mom. But you're right. Like, I would travel and see my dad wherever he is. And he definitely is like very immigrant entrepreneur. So like eccentric in his personality and would do fun, different things. So It's cool to kind of see the dichotomy between this life of like uniqueness, difference, travel, and then coming back to like home base of more of a conventional upbringing. So it's cool to kind of see both. And I wonder how much of that really has pushed both of us to like go against the norm and do different things, right?
So exactly. I really think, and my husband, who I started the business with, You know, his parents are also divorced. And it's funny. And like, we both went away to college. Like, I think that there are a lot of things that kind of make you who you are. And I'm not like advocating for divorce.
Yeah, but
I don't know. Like, I see my siblings who had two married parents and they're great and very happy. But I often have to like challenge them, you know, to think outside the box. And I think that, you know, part of that is probably coming from divorce.
Yeah, I know. We're talking about all the benefits. We're like not advocating for it, but yeah. You know, there could be, you know, pros and cons to everything. And it's interesting because at least in my situation, both of my parents, because they were divorced, always put not this pressure on me, but me and my sister to be financially independent, not rely on a partner. And I wonder how much of that also just motivates me to do big things, take those risks, like always be financially stable. But yeah, it's interesting.
Oh yeah. I think that's probably a huge part. It's funny because, you know, my mom and dad met at work. My mom wasn't financially dependent on my dad at all. And the divorce happened when I was very, very young. But my dad is just really difficult when it comes to money. I love him. I don't think he ever listens to the podcasts I'm on, but if he does, whatever. He knows how raw I am. And, you know, he just is a little bit controlling. It would be like, oh, you know, I want it to do something. And it would be like, he wasn't interested in that. And he'd be like, no, but if you do this, I'll pay for all of it. Like, there was kind of that weird sort of control. And I think because of that, I was always like, I will never depend on a man for money. And it's funny because my mom wasn't like that at all. And her and my stepdad really financially supported most of my life. But I think just that amount of weird control my dad had when I was with him or over something my mom wouldn't, you know, didn't want to pay for, I was like, oh God, I will never do this. Like, I'm always going to be super independent and be able to make decisions, because that control killed me, because I'm a control freak. I was like, no, totally. I want to be in control.
Exactly. Same. And it just shows like your scrappiness for stuff. Like, I remember having businesses and when I was a kid, and it was really just me hustling to make money to get what I wanted, because my dad wouldn't give me the money, you know, unless I was with him and he wasn't around, you know, 24/7. And my mom wasn't giving me everything and didn't spoil me. So it's nice. It makes us kind of feel a little bit more scrappy. And I feel like I definitely have that mindset even in my, you know, entrepreneurial phase in this life. So it's cool to see that. So before, you know, going again to Sugar and Bras and everything you've built there, what's so interesting as I kind of reflected back on some of your interviews is you never really thought you'd be an entrepreneur. And in your college years and even early 20s, it was a bit of a confusing time for you, right? And I want to bring this up because I also didn't know what I wanted to do at the time. And I feel like that's okay to be a little lost. But tell me more about that time period in your life and maybe some of the expectations you had of yourself at that time.
Yeah, I mean, you're totally right. I really sort of stumbled upon it. And then looking back on my life, it all made a lot of sense why it wasn't a total coincidence. I mean, I don't think a lot of things really are. But yeah, it was definitely confusing in the sense that I think your early 20s a lot of times are very confusing. I always felt like, you know, I was a type A person growing up. I, you know, was always in AP classes or had mostly A's, but I was also someone who, you know, my mom would let me miss a class if I had an A in it. So she'd be like, oh, I'll call you out. So I always was like very focused on this bottom line sort of situation. Like, if I have an A, I don't have to go to the class. Like, I was kind of like, you know, I was on the track of like being a good student, but I also like wasn't. Like, a lot of the kids who had straight A's or AP classes would like really be diligent about showing up, doing their homework. Like, I was always like kind of not paying attention in class. And then I would cram for a test, you know, the night before. So I think by the time I got to college, I was like, I'm just done with school. Like, I found a way to be good at it. But I also was like, I thought I would probably go on to grad school, because that's what like these track-minded, I think, peers were thinking about already. And I was like, you know what? That is just not for me. Like, I know I want to be successful and I don't know what that looks like, but I've decided it doesn't include an MBA, which was kind of like, I think, surprising for my parents or my friends who were all like, going to go to medical school, get the MBAs. And so it kind of makes sense that then I found this entrepreneurial journey. But at the time, it just felt like confusing. Like, okay, I know I want to be successful and I have no idea how that's going to happen, but I'm just going to kind of put faith in the future. And then I just decided to enjoy college. And I took those 4 years to probably enjoy it a little too much. But you know what? I was really present. I was probably had the least amount of stress I've ever had in my entire
wow,
life. And I don't
amazing.
Regret it. But I will say when I graduated, it was sheer panic, because I was like, now I don't really have the grades to get an MBA. what am I going to do with my life? It's a recession. This was crazy of me. I shouldn't have done that. I should have gone to a better school, you know, and the panic, I think, subsided probably by the time I started my business, but it took a good year and a half to like calm down.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say, it's so interesting. I mean, you are this type A person that did well. You had some rebel streaks, which is cool. But a typical type A person who does well in school, even gets those good grades, you usually have that job lined up. And I know when you graduated, there was no job, right? Like you said, you kind of went into panic. So what was your life situation at the time? Did you move back with your parents? And what was that first job that you took before, you know, Sugar and Bronze started?
Yeah. So I graduated in May 2009. Everyone, if they had the means, tried to stay in Boulder where I went to school for as long as possible, which meant like until your lease was up at the end of like, you know, mid-August or something. So I, you know, really just hung out that whole summer and tried not to think about the future. And then, yeah, I mean, at that point it was like, okay, I don't have a job and where else am I going to go? My parents aren't going to pay my rent anymore for me just to live on my own and not work. So I did. I moved back with my mom and my stepdad. This was, yeah, so like August 2009. And I got a job by October 2009. But let me tell you that August until October felt like eternity. I did not want to be living at home. My brother and sister were much younger than me. And it was like, I kind of got there and everyone was like summer break still. And then when they went back to school, my mom and stepdad would get up and go to work every day. I was like sitting in this house that I grew up in. And I was like, this is so depressing. Like, I don't have school to go to. I don't have a job to go to. Like, my friends aren't living here in this town that I'm in right now. And I would literally just cry at the dinner table. Sam and I, my now husband, we broke up at the time. So that added to my mess. God. And I would just cry at the dinner table. And my brother, who's like 12 and a half years younger than me, is still scarred by me living at home during that time. Because for him, 0 to 5 or whatever, I lived at home, you know, in his childhood. He was so young, he doesn't remember it, but that he remembers. And he's like, oh, Courtney being at home was just chaos and drama. And like, I was like, it was 3 months. Yeah, it was hysterical that looking back on it, but I got a job at a fintech company in Santa Monica. And, you know, I moved out, you know, probably by November 1st or whatever it was, 2010. I was just thrilled to have a job and to not live at home anymore.
Oh my gosh, it's so true. It's funny. I also graduated a semester early and I was like, I'm ready to get out of school. I'm ready to get a job, make money. But my job didn't start until that summer. So I had a whole semester. All my friends are enjoying their last senior year. I never even thought about that. I'm sitting home, similar to you. My mom is going to work. I'm by myself. And I'm like, this is the most depressing thing ever. So yes, it's a really challenging place to be in because you're so used to community and structure and fun. And then all of a sudden you're like, oh shit, like this is real life. It's very different. If you don't have a job, it's just like, what's the point of life? I remember being like, what is everything? What's the point? So I can imagine the mental state that you were in. So you know, finally get a job, you move out, you come to LA, and you know, fintech, from when I was doing some prep on you, you're like, that wasn't a passion of yours, but again, you just needed money to get out and do something, right? And you talk about how you didn't love that job, you know, you really were never excited to kind of go in. So tell me more about that experience. And maybe did you have any learnings that might apply to the business or any personal learnings for yourself during that period in your life?
I mean, I don't think I learned much of that job, to be totally honest. I mean, definitely learned about myself and life. Like, I realized, you know, there was quite a few people, I think especially at that time, people who were looking for jobs in my age group and were just envious of anyone who had a job. They would hear that I didn't have a lot to do at work. Like, this fintech company was growing really quickly, and I think they just kind of hired a lot of people without a lot of thought behind it. And so when I would tell my friends like, oh, I like have to go and show face and that, you know, I don't always have a ton of work to do. And they were like, that sounds like a dream. And I was like, I don't know if you're just jealous of the fact that like I am getting a paycheck, which was amazing. And I don't want to take for granted. But I was like, no, I wanted to be busy. Like, I wanted to feel stimulated. And so I realized pretty quickly that that was never going to be my life path, was to have a job where I had to do the bare minimum and get paid and get by. Like, that was not driving me. I think I had the most anxiety I've ever had, but I had the least amount to do. I didn't have homework, right? All I had to do was get there and show up, and then I could go home, and that was that. But I was so anxious. Like, I felt like I would show up and I would be like in a prison cell for the day. Yet I was like staring at the beach. Our office was on Ocean Avenue in Santa Monica. I had a beautiful view, but I felt like I was looking at people like living their lives on the beach, and here I was in this office. Yeah. So I think when we started the business sort of on the side of that job was the first time that I was like, I was able to go to work and be like, oh, like someone's calling to book an appointment. I can like sneak out and like, you know, my Google Voice was ringing on my cell phone or whatever. And then I finally, you know, was able to like just be excited again. I think I was just getting a paycheck and getting by. And that was like just so depressing to me.
Hey everyone, it's Yasmin here. In 2020, I was struggling with some debilitating health stuff. I just got off birth control and suddenly I had acne, mood swings, breast tenderness, and really painful periods. I tried so many things, but the one thing that worked was something called seed cycling. I know you're probably thinking, seed cycling? What the heck is that? It's a natural way to support your hormones using 4 specific seeds throughout your cycle. The challenge is that seed cycling can be a little complicated to do and kind of time consuming. So I decided to make an organic seed cycling product that is so easy to use. We make it effortless for anyone to get started today. It's called Bia, and it's a super easy way to add something powerful to your diet to support your hormones, regulate your cycle, and bring back balance. To learn more about Bia and join our community with thousands of incredible women all over the world, go to BiaWellness.com, and that's spelled BeeyaWellness.com. And check out the show notes for our promo code to get $10 off your first purchase. Thanks so much for listening, and now let's get back to today's episode. Lack of meaning and working towards something is like a really tough place to be. And so, you know, you're working out of this office, seeing these, you know, beautiful ocean, people living their life out in the sun. How did the idea for Sugar and Bronze kind of come about? Again, you didn't necessarily think you would be an entrepreneur. Now it all makes sense looking back. But when did that seed kind of get planted initially?
I mean, it was definitely Sam who had the idea initially. Like I was.
You guys got back together. When did you guys get back together?
We weren't broken up for very long either. I think, you know, probably like January, like New Year's Eve of 2009. So, you know, we probably didn't, you know, we were even talking when we were apart and maybe we didn't talk for like a month or so, but yeah, we got back together and we commuted for a minute and then he moved up to Santa Monica. But yeah, I mean, so at this point we were living together probably mid, I don't know, 2010. And, you know, I was like a bridesmaid in a wedding. I just had like a few things where I'm like, oh my gosh, I'm so pale from sitting in an office all the time. And I, you know, want a spray tan and they're so expensive in LA compared to what I was spending in Boulder when I would go get them. And I think he just was done hearing me complain. He was like, why don't, you know, you just start a business. And I was like, no, like I have no idea how to spray tan someone and that's so scary and I'm not quitting my job. And I think he was like, okay, I'll do it with you. You know what I mean? Like this, we can figure this out. And we, you know, each put in $500, no joke, put up a website and started it out of our apartment. And Sam didn't have a big role initially because it was like, he built the website and he helped me get the Google ads going, which were super important things. But after that, what was he going to do? Spray tan people? Like we would have never been in business. So I quit my job probably 3 or 4 months in and he quit his job maybe three years in. So, you know, for a while it was a lot of moral support and tech support.
Yeah. You know, it's so interesting because it's funny. I was telling you before we start recording, like I went to your old location when I had to go to a wedding. So you start thinking about, all right, I need to get a tan. I want to look good in my dress. And for me, it was always like, what are natural, better ways to do it? That's how I stumbled upon you. So you have this idea because you're going to weddings. And I know you were mentioning like, you were kind of joking with the idea of spray tan, right? Like you're not an esthetician. You don't really have that background. But was it really your boyfriend at the time being like, just go for it. Like what was truly the turning point for you? Because so many people listening in, like I'm always spitballing different ideas, but one of them was the one I really went forward with. So what was going on in your mind at the time? Were you just thinking maybe like, you know what? I'm complaining all the time. I got nothing to lose. Let me just try to make extra money. Like what was the motivation for you to like truly run with this idea?
My job was a dead end. And I wasn't happy. And it was also like, okay, well, worst case scenario, I lose this $500 I've put in, which at the time was my life savings. It felt really scary, but I was like, okay, I will survive if I lose this $500. And I think to me, it was like, once we started to see week over week, like slowly growing, I was like, if I can make the same amount of money doing this and as my job, I'm okay. At least I'm stimulated, right? And then it was like, if I can have enough clients where I can hire people and I'm running the business and I totally have control of my time back, which is kind of what I always wanted in high school or any time was just control of my time. It wasn't that I was not willing to work hard. It was like, I just want to do this on my own accord. If I could do that, then I really should go for this. So I think, you know, Sam initially sort of pushed me into it, but I decided to really, I think, jump in completely and quit my job once I saw just like a tiny bit of growth from that business and realizing that the outcome, you know, was a lot better than what I was doing currently.
And it's so wild that you guys, was it both of you put $500 in?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So I have not heard like $1,000 startup capital, which is amazing. So what did those early days look like for you? Were you doing it out of your apartment? Like what did that $1,000 go towards?
So it went towards our first machine, like HVLP airbrush tanning machine, and probably a couple gallons of solution, because we obviously were not making our own back then. Some like partitions and a couple things to like separate the dining room from the kitchen and the living room. So it felt like a little private space. And I think that was like largely what it went to. And so, yeah, we put up a website and people would literally come into the apartment and I would make sure Sam wasn't home. He would still be at work, or he would have him go to the gym. He hasn't been to the gym since. But yeah, like that's what it would look like. It was like me spray tanning at lunch because I lived and worked, you know, within a mile of each other, which was great. And then, or after work, and I would take appointments, you know, until however many appointments people wanted to book, really. I didn't care when I ate dinner or when I went to bed. So yeah. That's what it looks like.
I love it. When you're like very interested in building something like time, like it doesn't matter how much you're working, right? You have this full-time job, you're doing it at night, but you're so motivated and excited to get something off the ground. And, you know, I'm curious. So you were mentioning, going back a little bit, you left 3 months in, your boyfriend at the time, you know, left many years in. At what point were you like, okay, we're onto something, let's create a full retail location? Because with $1,000 of startup capital, like that is not enough. So when did that kind of happen for you?
So I think we put up a website November 1st, 2010. And then, you know, clients started to sort of trickle in. And then I think by January, I realized that I was turning, so January 2011, I realized that I was turning down clients because I had to be at work. And I was like, okay, this is crazy. Like, I need to go one direction or the other. And so at that point, that's when I made the decision to quit my job. So I think by February 1st, 2011, I was done. At that point, it was like, okay, we need to get this out of the apartment because there's no way this was a long-term thing to have it in the apartment. It was kind of like experimental. Does this work? We obviously weren't ready to sign a commercial lease if it wasn't going to work.
Yeah.
Then, you know, that would be way more of a commitment than losing $1,000. So at that point, that's when we looked for our first retail space. And it was just like, oh my God, how fast can we get this out of our apartment? At that point, you know, I was like spraying people all day long. Oftentimes, you know, there was truly no work life separation. And not that I was really doing a lot outside of working at that point, but just like to have people come in and like spray your apartment brown all day every day, it was like, it was just not working. We needed to find a real space. I need to be able to hire people. If I wanted to grow the business, obviously that was just the next step.
Yeah. And you had so much growth early on. And I love like the scrappiness of you proving out the concept in your apartment, you know, not putting too much money in it until you knew something was, you know, going to happen with the business. But what was so unique about what you were doing, you know, spray tans at the time, was that kind of uncommon or was your price point, like what really helped propel this referral and word of mouth that you were seeing so, so early on?
Yeah. I mean, I think that our price point was definitely a lot more reasonable than anything else out there. And then I think too, even it was our apartment and then our first store was not glamorous at all. Like I think we did our build out for like $8,000 of the money that we had already made, you know, from clients. So it was, you know, it definitely wasn't like a lavish experience in that sense. But I think that people felt comfortable. I think even like some of the early staff members that I hired, I really just went for that vibe of like, okay, most people are getting naked. How can we make them forget that they're getting naked and that they're just hanging out with a girlfriend or whatever and talking in a locker room or something where it's really a non-issue. So we just went for, you know, I think warmth and comfort and reasonable price point. And then obviously our training process and making sure everyone always had a great tan. So I think that's initially, you know, then people started writing online reviews. And so it was like advertising on Google at the time because Instagram didn't exist. Meta didn't have an ads platform and it wasn't even called Meta. It was just Facebook. So yeah, it was just some digital ads. Obviously we had no street visibility. I don't know if I mentioned that, but we were upstairs behind a tree in our first location.
Yes, that's where I went. That location in the back. Yeah. Santa Monica, right?
Yeah.
Oh my my gosh. That's impressive. So that was your first location in the back of Santa Monica.
That was our very first location. So it was upstairs behind a tree next to a nail salon. Yep.
Yes,
and then we rented out the back to a different person because we couldn't afford the whole space at the beginning.
That's amazing. And so thinking about the real estate, you know, because that's quite early for you to pull the trigger on, I guess, you know, getting rent, doing a build up, but it seems like it was $8,000. But any learnings at the time about securing that space? Because I believe that was also what, 2010?
Yeah, early 2011 that we found the space. And, you know, I think it was, so I really wanted to be on Montana Avenue in Santa Monica, which our Santa Monica store, it still is on that street. We've relocated to ground floor retail, but I really wanted to be on that street, which has always been an expensive street in terms of price per square foot for retail in Santa Monica. But it just felt like it was absolutely the right place to be in terms of just parking and feeling like a local vibe and a lot of other salons and things like that. I think what was advantageous for us at the time was that the economy still wasn't in a great place. So there was a lot of vacancies. And being upstairs behind a tree obviously reduced the price. So I think between the combo of those things, we were able to get the lease done and we were able to afford it. And, you know, it was a process I'd never gone through before. I am still so thankful to that landlord for taking, you know, the chance on us. And then, you know, sure enough, I think we signed a 5-year lease. And of course, I think we extended it for like another 3 or something. So we were there for 8 years and we were never late on rent. We never missed a day, you know. So I think that it all worked out. But they were, I think, really great to take a chance on us. But I also think due to the economic times, they were like kind of stuck between a rock and a hard place. I don't know if they necessarily wanted us, but.
And was it, I can't remember if it was like one of your friends or your boyfriend's sister, like someone was in commercial real estate. Tell me that story because I don't know much about commercial real estate, but I'm so fascinated with like real estate and everything. But what did she do at the time for you guys?
Yeah, that's so funny. I haven't thought about that in so long, but it was my now husband's basically his dad's first cousin. So his dad has several law offices and is pretty much, well, at the time was really based on the East Coast. Now he's expanded more. But so he had done a lot of deals with his cousin, just being like, you know, in the same town. And he was signing a lot of deals for law offices and she was a commercial broker. So, you know, when we were talking to our parents about what our plan was, you know, I think he was like, oh, you should use Lynn. And, you know, obviously she can't even charge you a broker's fee because she's not licensed in the state of California, but she'll totally do it, you know, as a family member. And they don't really need to know that she's not going to take a commission till the end. And they didn't even ask. And then meanwhile, she's like, you're going to take my commission and put it into their free rent. I'm like, oh my God, the balls. She was such a tiger. It was so funny. They were like, you know, we're grade A landlords. If we need to see your financial, she was like, I have grade A tenants. You know, like their business is booming. We don't even know. We're going to be growing out of this space. And I was like, the things that she said to them, just, and also I think that East Coast mentality dealing with like very West Coast landlords and brokers, they were like, who is this woman? And I think that they were almost like a little scared. They were like, oh, well, clearly these tenants must be amazing because she would never come in there with like this chutzpah. But she did. And it got the job done for us. And we were just sit there on mute, like laughing because it was just so far from who we, you know, we were just like, oh my God, she's bragging about us. We're not grade A tenants. We're like worried that we're even going to make this work out.
Oh my God. That's amazing. So they didn't end up like looking at your financials or requiring you guys to have some type of like cosign, or I don't know if that's the right terminology, but
they must have. And I'm trying to remember if we ended up asking a parent to cosign, we might have because I don't think we had a lot of financials to show. Yeah. Like, so they definitely asked for them, but we were like, here you go. You know, I think we were just opening a business bank account. So we might've had a co-signer that we were able to take off like after the first year or something, I think. God, I don't even remember.
I know. It's so long ago, right? But this was like over 10 years ago. So your details are still pretty strong for the time. But I'm curious, talking about your parents, what were they thinking at the time for you? Were they supportive? Were they like, Courtney, what the heck are you doing? You're spray tanning. You want to get a retail location? What was their mindset around all this?
I remember at first, when we were going to first start it out of the apartment, my mom said, you can't have a business out of your apartment. And I was like, well, that's really funny because my mom grew up the daughter of an immigrant and her parents had gotten divorced. And my grandmother, who I called my Nona, would she started a tailoring business out of her house in Chicago because she wanted to be present for her four kids, but also needed to make money. So she had all of her, you know, clients, essentially your customers, come to her house. And I was like, Mom, you like grew up in a house where people were coming in for their tailoring. And I think my mom just didn't think about it that way. Like maybe it just felt very like passe. And she was kind of like, oh, okay, whatever. You know, and then I think when she knew that I wasn't going to quit my job, she was like, okay, great. You're doing this in an intelligent way. And then when I did quit my job, she knew that the business was growing. So she was supportive. I don't know what their opinions would have been if we just like quit our jobs and signed up to do this right off the bat. They probably would have given us some warning, but because we kind of did it in a way where we were kind of tiptoeing in, everyone was pretty supportive. And I think they were all of our parents, you know, because there's many of them between both of us having divorced parents, they all kind of just knew us as people who were going to do our own thing. And so I think they were like, oh, well, you know, whatever. All right. Yeah. This will be fine.
They'll figure it out, whatever way. But you did thoughtfully do it. And I think like that's a right. I mean, everyone has different ways of starting a business, but it's funny because I give this recommendation, but I didn't do it. I quit my job, but I had a lot of savings. I started my business later in life. So I was very thoughtful about it. But I always say, like, if you could start something on the side to prove it out, because that financial strain, once you actually start a business, that mindset, I mean, you know, what you're going through, it can be very stressful if you don't have a cushion, if you don't have a stable job. And it's like, why would you think about the finances if you could still bring in income that's stable? It would just, I don't know, make it a little bit more of a better experience.
I'm totally with you, but I also see so many people, I think ignorance is bliss. Like jumping in at 23 was like,
yes,
a good thing. But the more that I see people try to do it later in life, like what you're saying, where they're like, I'm going to save up money, I'm going to quit my job when I'm ready. The more and more, maybe it's just as time goes on and people, you know, their prefrontal cortex is developed, they have more at risk, whatever it is. The more and more people that say they're going to do that, I see don't do that. They never leave that job. So I do think, though, like, yes, have some savings. Don't be an idiot about it. But I do think that having your back up against a wall is truly like the most important thing that needs to go on. Because sometimes if you just have too much of a cushion, you're just not like pushed into that and being forced to make it work. So it was like, I'm glad that I did it in a way where it was like, okay, I felt ready, but it was still a big risk, right? But I think I was like, if I fail, I will be able to come back from this, you know, I'm not going to be like on the streets.
It's so true. And it's interesting. I mean, obviously I can't change my own path. I always want to start a business, but I didn't know what it was. And like you said, like as you start working and you're staying in corporate or, you know, whatever you're doing, you're making more money, you're making a bigger reputation for yourself. It's like very tough to leave all that, to your point. And I remember I was starting this podcast and it was like the fifth conversation, similar to you, where each woman, different stories, but similar patterns were like, there's just, you got to just go for it, right? Like you got to just risk it. There's no right time. Cause we're all waiting for the perfect time to take the leap and know everything. And I'm like, that shit, it doesn't work like that, you know, now being in it. But it was really hearing stories like yours. I'm like, you know what? What am I waiting for? I keep waiting for this like aha opportunity to jump. But yeah, I could imagine, to your point, being younger, you're a little bit more oblivious. Like sometimes like I feel like I was too thoughtful about stuff, you know, about thinking through everything, like too mature. Sometimes I'm like, why do I need to be this way? So yes, pros.
No, but that's a real thing. And I'm like always, I think when anyone ever asks me, well, what advice do you have for young entrepreneurs or whatnot? And I hate saying, don't make a plan, because that sounds like terrible advice.
Yeah.
But I'm like, keep your plan to a minimum. Because one, you cannot plan that far out. Things change in business so rapidly and in ways that you wouldn't expect. But also, I really think that the more time I see people plan for a business that they're going to start, the less likely they are to start that business. So it's like, you really need to find that fine line of like, okay, I'm going to make a basic plan. I'm going to have some basic savings. I'm going to have some basic cash flow, you know, projections. But the more time that you spend in that plan, I feel like that almost becomes the job. And that is not starting a business. It's like, if that is what feels really good to you and how you want to live your life, like you should go be a rock star employee at a company that you're passionate about, and you should not start a business. And that's okay.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. But, you know, spreadsheets and decks, that is not entrepreneurship. And, you know, I'm also like, you should, I think, totally do things in life that make you feel uncomfortable. And, you know, I think that's where the biggest growth happens. But if it makes you so uncomfortable to leave those decks and spreadsheets, then just don't. And that's okay.
Totally. It's so true. It's funny. Like similarly, I meet a lot of entrepreneurs. I have a lot of friends in this space. And sometimes I'm like, they're so stuck on the planning before even launching, or like making sure the logo is perfect, making sure everything is perfect. Yeah. And I'm thinking to myself, are you just hovering there because you're scared, right? Like it's so much easier. Even looking back on my own journey, I'm like, oh, it was a piece of cake before we launched, like thinking about the product, and it was hard, quote unquote, at the time. But I was like, that is nothing compared to actually selling the product, putting it out there, having customers, like learning through the process. But you're so right. Some people just can stay because they're comfortable. It's very easy in that state to think about it and to write a business plan. But to your point, and I know I'm kind of jumping around a little bit, but people would always ask me like, do you have a business plan, especially coming from the world of finance? And I remember thinking like, how do you do a full-blown business plan if you don't even know? Like I wasn't even sure if my product, the first one, was going to stick, right? And like I wasn't sure exactly what my customer was until we started selling. So right. I remember always feeling a little like insecure that I came from this like finance background, but I didn't have like a full blown business plan. But looking back, I totally agree with what you said, because you need to be open, flexible, and do. And the way the business has grown would not even be part of my business plan. It's like grown in its own life, right? And it's being open and receptive. So I love that, because it could take the pressure out of starting something. It's like, just do it.
100%. And even now, like we've at times hired some people who are like trying to plan things and do things in our current business for 5 years into the future. And I'm like, they're not the right person to work with us. Sure. Because by the time you get 5 years down the line, I'm like, what a waste of time. It's like, no, you need to live it, do it. You know, again, I think business plans should be very basic, unless you're starting SpaceX, like, you know,
it's true. Exactly.
I don't support it.
No, that's a good point. And it's so much of it is like executing on opportunities, which is, you know, I'm sure you've done. You see something, you see an opportunity, you jump on it, you get it done. It's like, it's not about the ideas. It's actually doing the work and executing, which is like the success of so much. And then being in the game, right? Like you guys have been doing this day in and day out. I'm curious, because I'm 3 years in my business and I'm beginning to see the compounding effects of being a brand that's out there, right? Like, do you see that also for your brand as you continue to be 5 years in, 10 years in, and so on?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, for sure. Even now, so it used to feel like if we opened a store in an existing market, we knew it was going to ramp faster because like there was awareness in that market. Maybe someone lived by our other location, but worked by the new location. You know, and opening a new market was really scary and it was going to ramp slower. Now it's like, there's almost like it's starting to have some nationwide. I mean, I don't want to say we're like totally there, but there is a little bit more of that. We're like, we opened in Houston two stores pretty quickly in succession, and it was a new market for us. And immediately, you know, we start to see the books filling up. So, and, you know, I hope the same, you know, continues into as we expand our product line. But it's really exciting now to see that compounding effect of whether or not people just have friends in the new market that they're telling them about, people who have just moved, you know, New York, LA. It's like people are so bi-coastal. There was that connection. So it's really exciting to see the compounding effects.
Yeah, I feel like so much of business is just like staying in the game, doing it year after year, like those compounding effects, like it doesn't blow up overnight. It's literally year over year in the growth. And like every woman similar to you we have on the podcast, and I've done hundreds at this point, it's like 10 years in the making, 15 years in the making. So I like to underscore that, because going from 0 to 100 in year one is just not the reality of starting a business at all. It's like one foot in front of the other for years to figure things out.
Yeah. We didn't raise money until we were 9 years in.
Well, that's what I was going to actually get to. So you guys, you know, completely self-funded, bootstrapped for 9 years. What was the impetus for you to be like, okay, it's time to bring on an investor? I'd love to hear more about that, because that's a big shift.
Yeah, it's a really big shift. And we were fortunate enough to always be profitable, at least not during COVID, but in the years leading up to COVID. For us, we didn't have to bring on an investor. It was more like, what do we want to do at this point? So we kind of, you know, we had heard a lot about people bringing on capital partners, the good, the bad, the ugly, and also the sexiness of it all. You know, sometimes people bring on capital partners and you see them, you know, grow nationwide overnight. And, you know, that feels really exciting, you know, as an entrepreneur. So we were like, let's get to 10 stores and really evaluate where we're at. And then at that point, we decided, okay, so if we don't bring on partners, we can take better salaries because we really hadn't been paying ourselves a lot until then. We can take decent adult living salaries, you know, and we can continue to open stores and reinvest profits as well, you know, do both. And we can open a couple a year and still be profitable and grow at that speed. And I think at that point, we had sort of already gotten there where we weren't really taking great salaries, but we'd already like figured out how to like open a couple a year. I think in the year before our investment, I think 1 year we like opened 3 or something like that. And we were like, all right, we can keep doing this, but then we're just doing the same job that we did last year. Yeah. And I think we were so used to our job changing so much in the first 9 years that we were like, well, we want to be in that unknown world. I think that's where we feel comfortable, is like in the chaos of it all. And it felt like if we wanted to really grow nationwide and we wanted to create a product line, that we really had to take on a capital partner for that. So that's when we made the decision, like, let's do something else that we haven't done before. And in that, you know, too, we were like, we could sell some shares of the business and take some chips off the table, because really at this point in our lives, all of our eggs were in one basket. You know, we had turned, you know, I don't know, 31 or something like that. And we were like, if we want to have a family someday, you know, it's great to de-risk a little bit after 9 years in. And so, yeah, we went on a horse and pony show after we picked an investment banking partner. You know, they were really great, Piper Sandler. And we chose Main Post Partners, and it was a great decision. It was late 2019. We were going to open 50 to 60 stores the next 5 years. And obviously COVID hit pretty quickly and everything was paused, but you know, now obviously we're back on track.
Crazy, the timing of that. Oh my gosh. There's so much I want to unpack in what you were saying. And I think one thing that we don't talk enough about, especially if you're maybe self-funded, is the salary component. Like, you were running, you and your husband, you guys were married at that time.
No, right? We didn't. We got married in 2022. We waited a really, really long time.
Okay.
So, yeah, no, we were still just dating. Yeah.
Got it. So, you know, you and your boyfriend at the time are not taking like adult salaries. And, you know, I think that's a big sacrifice, right? And you were running this business that was doing well for years. And that was actually something that was surprising for me that I just like to bring up, because, you know, even if you're doing well and you're profitable, you always want to invest in growth, right? And for me, I'm always investing in the business versus taking that money out myself. And like, exactly. One day I'm like, God, when will that day come? But I selfishly want to continue growing the business and hiring team. I mean, we have team members who make more than me and my co-founder, but that's a decision right? I'm like, people don't talk about this. Like,
no, that was us too. Yeah.
Was it when you brought in investors where you guys had like, you know, that adult salary at that point, or were you slowly incrementally increasing it just through the years?
I think for a long time, we just took as little as we could. And then late 20s, I think we started to increase it. And then probably at 30, we gave ourselves a decent raise. And I think we also wanted to see like, okay, how much do we want to bring on capital partners because of what we're paying ourselves or because of the growth that we want to have. And so if we at least pay ourselves well this year, you know, does it change how we're feeling about this potential capital raise? And yeah, it really didn't change how we were feeling. So, you know, we did take another raise when we obviously brought on partners as well, which I think most people do. Yeah, it wasn't really until our late 20s that we started to bump it up at all.
Yeah. No, it's interesting. And it's funny how you said chaos. It's so true in terms of like the business when things are kind of rolling and like the foundation's there. I'm also thinking like, what's next? Like how can I shake things up? So I can imagine you're doing this. You have the playbook of like opening a few stores a year, you know, that I'm sure that was a learning experience, but as you were kind of doing it every year, you're like, all right, what's next? And I think it's like the craziness of entrepreneurship. It's like, we are not okay being normal and comfortable. It's like, we push ourselves in uncomfort and pain. And I think you get used to that feeling. It's like, I'm definitely feeling that. I'm like, what's next? Like, what is going to really push us and like make me feel uncomfortable? So I could imagine the mindset that you and your husband were in at the time to like do something bigger and different. So
yeah. And it's so funny that you say that too, because I remember being on a call with our private equity firm shortly after, you know, COVID had hit and we were closing everything down. And Joey Gonzalez, who's the CEO of Barry's, is on our board. And he was just very even keel on the call, you know, like he always is. But also I think that our private equity partners we're definitely stressing, right? Because we're not the only portfolio company that has brick and mortar that's, you know, going through this. And they're like, just, oh my God, you know, so this is such chaos, something we could have never imagined, you know, as so many people were feeling. And I think we were all just very like unhappy with it, but we were also like, we'll get through this and we're calm. And then Joey kind of sat on the call. He's like, you know, I think that as entrepreneurs, you know, we're kind of comfortable in the uncomfortable. And so I think that's why you just don't hear a lot of, you know, stress from us, and we're going to be okay. And it was funny because he was going through the same thing with Barry's, but on a much bigger scale, right? He wasn't just saying that as a board member who had some e-com business that was thriving. Like, he was going through it too. And he was like, everything's going to be okay, you know? And I was like, yeah, that's kind of funny. We are really comfortable in the uncomfortable. And that was something we could have never predicted, but you know, here we are on the other side of it.
I know. And it's so true. And I think like you build that muscle. It's like building a business. It always is. You're dealing with challenges so much day in and day out. So I would imagine 10 years in or being the leader of Barry's, like you have gone and seen so much that you become more unfazed because you know it always works out some way or another, or you'll figure it out. So having that confidence, I think, is key, but it takes being in the shit to like get to that point. So It's a good reminder for me, like as I, you know, navigate challenges, I'm like, oh, it's actually getting better and better as the years go on, you know, less stress, less anxiety. It's a different way of managing. So that's really cool that he had brought that up. Yeah. And so COVID, you guys went literally to zero. I don't think that's something you would ever imagine as a business owner. So I really can't imagine going through that. Like, you clearly have overcame everything, but what were you doing at the time? Because I think most of your locations were in California, New York, which were like the most strict, I would say, during that point.
It's yep.
Like, things exactly. are open and it's closed. It. So how did you navigate? Like, what did you do to kind of get you out of that, you know, hole of going to zero?
It was really tough, especially because we had a couple stores under construction in New York at the time too. And they even paused construction in New York City, which they didn't in California, but they did over there. So that was like a whole nother thing too. So we're closed everywhere and we don't know for how long. And then of course, like you said, we then find out over time that we're in the strictest states. And also, California didn't even have us in the same category as like hair salons. Like, we were personal care services. So, you know, you saw like nail salons and hair salons open at times where we were still closed. So that was even more frustrating because we were like, we're a one-on-one in a room. This is like a bunch of people, you know, together in a room for hair and nails. And like nothing made sense. And it was just all so infuriating. And so we launched e-commerce, I think, gosh, it was like 6 to 9 months ahead of schedule. We launched it like overnight with just sort of, we were waiting to do a product rebrand and we hadn't done it yet. So we were like, all right, well, this is what we have. And again, it was sort of like, I don't know when we would have ever launched e-commerce though, because we were waiting until everything was like perfect.
Sure.
And so it was so good to have that like, well, we just need to rip the Band-Aid moment and then we'll iterate as we go, which we've done. And it was great. It was like, okay, all hands on deck. We have to figure out fulfillment and whatever. So that was immediate. And then sort of navigating the opening and closing, you know, was its own challenge. And then I think at one point we were like, okay, we just need to operate in whatever capacity we can. So we were allowed to do like outdoor services. So we built cabanas. But at this point it was like August. So it was like a lot of the areas, even in LA, it was like too hot to sugar. It has to be like 72, which we get most of the year, but not in August. So I think we did like our beach cities, like it was like Santa Monica, Hermosa Beach. We had these outdoor cabanas for sugaring, and then we did mobile for spray tanning, where it could be on someone's patio or backyard or, you know, whatever. And we built that functionality into our app, which was also a good learning curve. And I would love to bring that back actually at some point. But once our stores reopened, we kind of had to focus on just, you know, getting people hired and trained again. So, you know, we really just did whatever we could. And then we were like, well, what states do want us? Well, you know, what states will let us operate? And it was like, well, Texas. So we opened a pop-up in Dallas because we had actually planned to sign a lease. I think it was like right before whenever everything was shutting down, it was like, we were going to put our, you know, pens on paper for a Dallas lease that week. And obviously we didn't. And so after a while into COVID, we were like, what if we just do a pop-up? It's not as scary as signing, you know, a big lease right now because we were still bleeding so much cash. But we did a pop-up in Dallas and that worked out really well. And, you know, as soon as we started to feel, you know, like we were cash flow positive again, we signed our first real lease in Dallas and moved the pop-up. And Dallas has been great to us ever since. And just like the state of Texas, we've continued to expand in, which was great. But it was, yeah, it was a lot. It was a lot of fire drills during that time too. It was just, it was like annoying because it was like, it just felt like we went back in time in terms of the amount of staff we had, the amount of revenue we were doing, the amount of stores that were operating. It was really frustrating in a lot of those ways, but a good exercise nonetheless. What doesn't kill you makes you stronger, right?
I'm sure what's tough is like, things would change. You could be open, then you can be closed. Like the, especially in California, I remember at the time, like the rules were always shifting and changing. So I could imagine you finally have a strategy and then you're like, oh shit, we can't do this. We got to pivot. It was like nonstop. So
we spent like 25 grand, which we didn't want to, right? Because we're bleeding money on these outdoor cabanas. And I think we were open for like 2 or 3 weeks before LA said, oh, actually, you can't even be open outdoors anymore. And it was like, it just felt like, I don't know, in this country of freedom that we live in, it just didn't feel like we had the freedom when so many people wanted to come in. It's like, it felt like it was their personal choice. You know, we weren't forcing people into our business. Yeah, that was annoying to navigate.
It's crazy because you were saying you guys were always so profitable, but going through COVID, you guys were bleeding cash. The timing of having investors just blows my mind for you guys, like 2019. It's just crazy, like the timing of everything. And, you know, it's so interesting because your business, you know, COVID or not, is such a people-centric business. I'm curious, like, as you reflect on the business, what has been the most time-consuming or challenging part of it? Is it the people management? I'm just kind of curious because I know that probably is a big chunk of what you guys are managing and operating.
Of course. Yes. I mean, people are forever challenging, right? Like we're not a business of robots. Hiring and training and navigating that is a daily, you know, it's what we focus on the most. But obviously that is the service we provide. I mean, right? It is sugaring and tanning, but it's really someone, you know, servicing you in a room and making you feel comfortable, providing you with all the necessary information that you need to know for your prep and post-care and all of that. So that is definitely always ongoing. And then I would say beyond that too, just construction. Like now that we're opening so many stores, it's always been a challenge because it's just something you can't always control and you're relying on these GCs or architects or whatnot. And also the city permitting process is always a challenge. You just never know what you're going to get and things can just be in limbo no matter how hard you try with a permit expediter to move things through. So, you know, we're really lucky to have a great VP of design and development who oversees all of that. And she's so detail oriented and meticulous. And I like don't know how we would do it without her, but it's always challenging.
And I'm curious, how do you, so you mentioned, you know, your now husband came in 3 years in. How do you guys divide and conquer the roles of the business?
Yeah, you know, we learned very early on that we needed to divide and conquer because I think he quit his job and then I felt like he was like stepping on my toes because I was like, I do everything all day, you know, and he was like, well, no, I left my job so that we can, you know, move faster. So I had to learn how to, you know, give things up. And that was my first big lesson in like learning how to give things away and trust and not do everything, which was hard. I'm glad it was my, you know, partner that I was giving it to because it's really scary to like, okay, I'm turning over the bookkeeping. Oh my God, at least yes. I knew he wasn't like going to be siphoning off the top or something. Cause I didn't have time to double check his work.
Totally. It's very scary. I still pay all the bills and I'm like, it's the most time consuming thing, that's tough, but yes, continue.
In terms of dividing and conquering, there was definitely some arguments I would say at the beginning because there were some things that were just natural. Like Sam was always a bit more tech savvy than me. And so him taking over sort of website updates and whatnot was like, I was like, oh, great. And then other things that we just both didn't enjoy doing, we were kind of like, should we flip a coin? How do we decide? You know, so it kind of became pretty quickly where I continued to really create all the standards for operations and training, but I also didn't necessarily enjoy managing people. So he kind of took on a lot of the management, which was great. And then we split a lot of things like real estate. I took on the majority of marketing, but then he was still very heavily involved in the digital ads. So, you know, we didn't feel like we had to divide things like you would in a textbook where it was like, oh, all of this is him or all of this is her. It was like, you know, we're going to divide most things and have very clear, defined, you know, daily tasks and responsibilities. But if we want to split up something like marketing or whatever, why can't we? You know, it's like there's no rules.
Yeah. Yeah. I love it. And you guys recently had, or maybe not so recently, a son, right? How old is he now?
He's 9.5 months.
Oh my gosh. 9.5 months. So sweet. And how has that kind of changed, or maybe it hasn't changed, like the dynamics of your life, right? Like obviously managing the business, you guys are both fully engaged still. Now you have a younger child. How has that experience been for you?
It's amazing. We love him so much. He's the greatest, but it's also from a business standpoint, you know, very challenging. We're so used to being able to work all night. And now, you know, we really want to spend time with him at the end of the workday. So carving out that time between when we finish meetings and when he goes to bed, you know, it's a big chunk of time and it's a big responsibility only, you know, with one child. Like, I don't know how people run businesses with multiple children.
Totally.
And I don't know if we would have been able to do it any earlier than we did because we were just working, you know, around the clock for so long. And we have great help. I mean, we couldn't do it without help.
Yeah. No, it is interesting. I mean, me and my husband don't have kids yet, but the first 2 years of starting my business, I was not ready at all. Like when people be like, oh, you guys, like, are you going to have kids? And I'm like, you know, one day, but just even thinking about having a child when I was so in the thick of building and I didn't have a team at the time, like I couldn't even imagine. I'd be like, he would be a single dad because I would just not be around. So it's interesting, right? Because like you were saying, like, you don't even know if you would be ready or mentally there, right, for that transition. And it's such a big transition and you want to be able to take breaks when you can and have somewhat of a stable business. I mean, there's always going to be surprises, right? Entrepreneurship is not like every day is the same, but that sense of stability is always like interesting, but it's still hard even when you have a team, right? Like kind of like what you were saying.
It felt like, you know, we got through COVID, we were back on track. It was like for the first time, it was like, oh, we know what we're doing. And then I was like, okay, well, now it's time to add something else into the mix where we don't know what we're doing. You know, it's like that constant. I'm like, what is wrong with us? Like our lives were just getting to the point where they felt really comfortable. And then pregnancy was just not comfortable. And then, you know, obviously the outcome is worth it. But then you're like, your life gets turned upside down again. I'm like, oh my gosh, we're just like addicted to living in the uncomfortable.
Totally, totally. And it's so interesting. And me and my husband talk a lot about this because he's also an entrepreneur. And it's like the way that we don't have kids yet, but we talk a lot about it. It's like the way you guys also manage your life is very different than like the average family who has a kid or two kids. Cause I sometimes will compare myself and he reminds me like the way we do stuff is already different and we can do things differently. And I'm not going into the weeds, but it's just a good reminder. Cause I'm sure the way you guys manage your life, both of you being involved in the business and having a young child might not look like someone else who might have more stability or who might be like a doctor or more like 9-to-5 job. So it's chaos, I'm sure, in like the most beautiful way.
100%. And like, I always preach this to my team and they're sick of hearing me talk about it because like, I'm always talking about first principles thinking. And, you know, I didn't come up with this concept, obviously, but the more that I heard other people talk about it in business, I'm like, I realize how common analogical thinking is and how that's our go-to. Like you even saying like, oh, I compare myself to other people and I'm like, oh, well, this is how it's done or traditionally whatever. It's like, we just naturally do that. And it's like, it's a daily practice to say, I don't have to do things that way. Like let's start from zero and build up. And if my outcome ends up being the same as other people, fine. But at least I thought it through and like what works for me, you know? And then sometimes I look at my life or my schedule and I'm like, I feel guilty about the way I do things or whatever. And then I'm like, you know what? Or I could just be really thankful that I've chosen to do my life this way and it works for me. And I don't need to compare myself to someone who gets up at 5 a.m. like my mom did, you know, my entire life. I'm like, I could never do that. How did she do that? How did people do that? And you know what? Like, Courtney, you don't need to, it's just okay. You've decided not to do that. And like, embrace it. Like, I don't know why I put that pressure on myself, but sometimes I still do.
Totally. I mean, even for me, that whole 5 a.m., like I've tried and when I was working in finance and tech, like I would wake up early and work out. But now, and I'm in the wellness space now with hormones, I'm like, you got to do and honor what feels good to you. And for me, sleep is like now a non-negotiable. But of course, I also compare myself, like I feel guilty waking up at 7 a.m., right? But then I'm like, I need it for the way I operate and like how my body is. So I feel like as we get older, if we can just like create a life that's unique to us and everyone is so different, that's like so key. But anyone who's not familiar with first principles thinking, can you kind of share what that is?
Oh my gosh, I'm probably going to butcher whatever philosopher
or your perspective
or whatnot. But to me, it just means, you know, instead of taking something, you know, like a car and say, well, okay, people build it this way, right? So, you know, I'm going to start a car company. I'm going to, you know, take whatever is out there, start from there, and then add bells and whistles or, you know, maybe modify a little bit, but just like assume that everything that's in that car is there for a reason. You know, that's what a lot of people and companies do. And they kind of say, well, if it wasn't, if it didn't need to be there, it wouldn't be there. Well, that's not true. If you start from zero and say, I'm going to forget everything I know about a car, and I'm just using a car as a random example, obviously, I definitely don't know anything about having a car company. But, you know, if I'm going to start from zero and make zero assumptions about why anything is the way it is and just use basic, you know, sort of logic of zero to one to two and see what comes out of that, that's really first principle. So I think it's this issue that we have where we make these assumptions that the world is or something is the way it is for good reason is what I call building shit on shit. Like it's not always there for a good reason. And once in a while you'll break it down and go through the first principle sort of exercise and you're like, oh, that is there for that reason. Cool. I'm not saying everything is like a fraud, but unless you go through that mental exercise and go through that work sort of with everything in your business and in your life. And it's really hard sometimes in your own business to do that because sometimes you've created that shit on shit and not because, you know, you were being thoughtless, but just like time and things that came up and whatever. And sometimes then you feel like married to this because you've like put so much time into it. And you're like looking at the organization of something or the way something's like structured or training. You're like, this actually doesn't make sense. Like if I could go do this from scratch tomorrow, it would look differently. You know, great. Like then do it from scratch and make it look different.
Yeah. Oh, I love that so much. And I think that's also the beautiful thing of maybe starting a business and not necessarily being an expert in that industry, because you can approach it in a whole different way. Like a lot of people also think like, oh, I'm not an expert in XYZ, but similar to you, you didn't have a background. You kind of came in with a different lens and built it in a different way. So I think there's so many positives and I'm glad you brought that up. It's a good reminder, like in your business and also your life, right? Especially as entrepreneurs, we want to be different. We want to do different things. So like, how does that show up also in the life we live? Because you have to have a different life to do different things. So it's all like interconnected, right?
Oh, truly. It really is. Yeah.
I love that. Well, I'm so excited. Tell us more about what's next. Like what gets you excited about the business coming up? Or maybe if there's anything personal you want to share, but what's next for you?
No, I don't have any personal updates. Everyone's like, when's baby number two? I'm like, not right now.
I can't imagine. I can't imagine people asking that. Yeah.
Oh my God. Well, I think they're like, you're geriatric. No, yeah, so.
Which is a whole other conversation that we need to talk about. Yes.
Yeah. But no, I mean, in terms of the business, you know, we're opening 10 to 12 locations a year. So we just opened, oh my gosh, I feel like it's like three in the last 3 weeks, which is really exciting. So we still have quite a few more to open this year. And we just opened, Houston was the most recent new market. Miami is the next new market. Cool. So we're really excited about Miami coming up here in April. And then I think the following market after that is likely to be DC, but it's not signed, sealed, delivered yet. So looking towards, you know, what's next, of course, and really expanding our product line and also changing up some of our packaging, which I find really exciting, and just sort of growing that part of the business. And, you know, that's sort of what's in store for the, you know, the end of 2024. And again, I don't like to look too much beyond that because we don't even know where we'll be, but that's sort of what's on the current horizon.
Well, I love it. It's so amazing to just see like all the success you've had, how you guys continue to grow, because I remember that first location. And when your team reached out, I was like, oh my gosh, this is incredible. They've expanded so much. So it's so great to you know, meet you, understand the story a little bit. And thank you so much for joining us and sharing all your gems along the way.
Thank you so much for having me. This was so fun. I feel like it's so different than any of the other podcasts I've done. So I really enjoyed chatting with you.
Thank you so much for listening to this episode of Behind Her Empire. If you enjoyed this conversation, it would mean the world to me if you would consider leaving a review or even sharing this episode with someone who might be inspired to create their own empire. To stay updated on new episodes or join our private community, visit behindherempire.com to sign up. We send inspiring and short emails every week to your inbox. I'll see you next week. And until then, remember, you're always in charge of your own destiny, and it's never too late to start your own empire.